Hello, welcome to Time to Say Goodbye. It is the 20th of March, and actually today is the first day I think I've ever recorded the podcast on the day it comes out, so there's no need to do the usual little thing saying if something happens in the world, if something happens in the next 2 hours, I think is what it will be. Today, I have a very special guest, Jane Kosten. How are you doing, Jane?
I'm good. How are you?
Jane, why, I did not, I usually ask for a bio. I don't want to get this wrong. Why don't you bio yourself?
I'm a New York Times contributor and opinion. I'm a CNN contributor. And right now I'm a fellow at the University of Southern California, which is why I'm in Los Angeles, which is why we're on the same time zone.
Nice, nice. Yeah. I brought you on today because I wanted to talk a bit about the NCAA tournament that's coming up. And we've talked about this before because we text back and forth about sports quite a bit. But, I think that there is a conversation to be had that I've wanted to have with you for a while about women's sports, specifically mm-hmm. women's basketball. So for people who are not sports fans, the very quick way to put it would be to just say that this is really seen as a landmark year in women's basketball. I think that that is like a just yeah. objectively true statement, right?
You're seeing viewership numbers that are in some cases higher than men's basketball. You're seeing more interest. This is the first year in which the court for the women's tournament will say like NCAA March Madness because they had to like get the rights to do so, and it apparently took them 40 years. I think that after a long period of a lot of enthusiasm among people who were into women's basketball, you are finally getting casual enthusiasm for women's basketball, which I think that would, like, the last 2-3 years, it's been building, but like now you're starting to see that it's like, people watching women's basketball who are not the kind of people who would watch women's basketball.
Right, right. And I think that there's like two ways to think about it. The first is that I do think there has been a buildup, right?
Yeah.
So UConn, it used to be that basically nobody cared at all, right? And that mm-hmm. was many years. And then at some point, Gino Auriemma and Pat Summitt had a huge rivalry that's Tennessee and UConn. Mm-hmm. And that was a period where I think that like it was written about, but probably nobody actually watched it, right? Like it was sort of a thing where Sports Illustrated would send somebody out once every 3 years, and they would write about Gino Auriemma and Pat Summitt, and they would write mm-hmm. about it in these very hagiographic, almost patronizing terms, yeah. if you think about it.
Yeah,
right?
Like, which we'll talk about this, but yeah. like how people write about women's basketball coaches versus how you write about coaches, even having to do that, like even talking about like, oh, there are coaches and then there's women's coaches, and that's like two different things.
Right.
So you had this long period in which it was basically, and you know, all credit to UConn and Tennessee, like the 1990s and early 2000s, they just had a dynasty. Though you can make the argument now that the game is, because the game is much more, like the playing field is leveled, like it's not just, like UConn would go like 3 years without losing.
Right.
Like that was, I remember, like, when I think one of the best buzzer beaters I've ever seen was a couple of years ago, Mississippi State beat UConn in the tournament. And it was, like, their first loss in, like, 2.5 years or something like that. Like, that used to just be kind of how it is. And now I'm looking at the teams with, like, the best odds in the women's bracket. And I think only South Carolina is undefeated. Everybody else has, like, a thing or, like, a potential pitfall or something like that, which is good. Like,
right.
I think it's very good for the game that you are now seeing a lot of teams that could be really good, are really good, but like, you know, also could lose. Like, it's not just like UConn and then a bunch of like, you know, layabouts.
Yeah. Yeah. It's seeing if they won't lose. It used to be every good player would go to UConn or Tennessee.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So like Candace Parker went to Tennessee, mm-hmm. Diana Taurasi, Rebecca yeah. Lobo, all those, Maya Moore, they all went to UConn. And then, and that was basically it. But now you have like the, you know, Caitlin Clark is at Iowa. Yeah. She's the best player maybe of all yeah. time. And then you have Juju Watkins, at USC. who is at USC, who is, you know, the best freshman anyone has ever seen. I don't think that that's really debatable. And then you have...
it's, her numbers are bananas. Like, you start doing... I love any player who comes in and starts doing, like, I think the best example is Shohei for the, like, you know, now the Dodgers, where it's like everything he did, no one has done since like 1890.
Right.
Yeah. And you see that, like, with Juju, you saw that, you know, with Caitlin Clark or something like that, like all these people having to be like, who the hell is Pete Maravich? And then all the old people being like, let me tell you about Pistol Pete Maravich. And like, okay.
There's like grainy YouTube videos that people are ripping onto Twitter of like Pete Maravich throwing court-length left-hand passes.
He was a problem. I mean, I love he was a problem Twitter, where it's like you reference some player who was actually like super famous. Yeah, and you got to say like, oh, people forget that he was a problem back in the day. And it'll be somebody like Larry Bird. You're like,
Look, I have a whole Larry Bird segment queued up though, so let's save that one. But I want to move on to sort of, there is a rivalry right now, and it's one that I think is quite interesting. It's and that college sports are best when the rivalries are against coaches, because the players, I mean, they used to stay 4 years.
Yeah.
Now they either stay 1 year or they stay 7 years, right?
Yeah.
It's like a weird thing. But, you know, the two coaches are Dawn Staley of South Carolina and Kim Mulkey of LSU, right? And so I want to, I have this thing queued up. I hope it works, but I have this audio queued up because I think for people who don't know who Kim Mulkey is, this is going to be, this kind of explains who she is. Hold on. This is right after she won the national championship last year.
And coach, they say you can always go home again, and you did. And now you're bringing a trophy with you. How does this feel to bring a trophy home to Louisiana?
This is her fighting back tears, by the way, and like pointing.
Coach, it's a lifetime, Holly. This is the fourth time I've been blessed. Never in the history of LSU basketball, men or women, have ever played for a championship and to win it. I think my tears are tears of joy. I'm so happy for everybody back home in Louisiana.
Coach, this is one of the most improbable championships you could even write a script for. You had one player on the roster coming back. How did you assemble this group of women together, and how did they come together to be so strong in this moment?
Well, I have personalities, and I think a lot of these personalities coaches want to be scared of. I'm not afraid of that. I played with personalities in college. I played with a personality myself. They just are ballers. And golly, Holly, I'm just stunned. I'm blessed. I'm appreciative. It's Palm Sunday.
Okay, that's a good place to end. So that's that is, I think that's the Kim Mulkey experience in a nutshell.
Yeah.
So what were your thoughts listening to that?
Well, first, it's interesting. And I'm also like, Palm Sunday is a funny religious holiday because it starts Holy Week for Christians. And Palm Sunday is like, everything is great. Jesus is coming to Jerusalem. What could go wrong? And then like 5 days later, he's executed by the state. So like, it's kind of funny when someone's like, Palm Sunday. And I'm like, ugh. It's like watching like, it's like getting, you know, Mary Todd Lincoln getting really excited about going to Ford's Theater. Like, okay. But yeah, I think that she has, the thing about Kim Mulkey is that she operates within, she's one of the first women's coaches who has not felt the need to operate or be liked outside of what she does. Like, I think, I mean, you could argue this about Gino, but Gino, like, everyone knows about, like, UConn and Gino. But, like, Pat Summitt was an ambassador for the game. She knew she had to be. She knew that she was coming in. Like, her entire story of starting at Tennessee when it's, like, she has nothing. She's driving, you know, she's driving players to games.
Right.
And so she had to perform this very specific way of being like, I am not just a coach at University of Tennessee. I am an ambassador for the idea of women's basketball. And that is, she did, in my view, I think she did a very good job of that. That is an impossible thing to ask someone to do. And Kim Mulkey won't do it. Like, Kim Mulkey, she is an LSU basketball coach now. She was at Baylor. Like, she is exactly what she needs to be. And she's able to pull in recruits and get, you know, get in transfers. Like, she does all of the stuff she's supposed to be doing, but she's not like a champion for women's sports, which I actually kind of, I kind of like that. I kind of like that we can get coaches who in women's basketball, like you have coaches in anything else. Like, no one is like Rick Pitino as an ambassador for the game. Like, who you need to get a different ambassador for men's basketball.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of appreciate the fact that she's just like, you know, no one has ever, I've done this four times. No one has ever done this at LSU. I'm awesome. These players are awesome. It's Palm Sunday.
Yeah. The funny thing is that prior to that, and in subsequent interviews after they won, she really didn't talk about the players at all. You know,
nope.
She just kind of talked about herself. And I remember when, after they won the title, PFT commenter, who's the very funny guy on who does Part of My Take, he basically tweeted Kim Mulkey is an awful person, almost breaking character. And it was like,
yeah,
because Kim Mulkey was not talking about her players, she wasn't even really giving them lip service. This clip is the one time she did. And it was all just about the greatness of Kim Mulkey.
Of getting all of these people to do what she wants. Which, like,
yeah, exactly.
At a baseline level, and I think, I'm not sure if we've talked about this, but I've thought about this a lot, but like, of the major sports to be a coach of, I think there is a reason to me that, like, you know, you saw it in men's basketball and you see it in basketball writ large, like, every college basketball coach eventually goes insane. Like, something happens. Like, Mike Huggins had to be basically sedated for games. Like, I remember when he was at the University of Cincinnati, like, the UC Xavier University, so that used to be the Crosstown Shootout until they got into a giant fist fight in 2011. I thought it was awesome. People didn't think it was awesome. But, like, when he was at UC, he was unhinged. And, like,
oh, yeah,
when he went to West Virginia and started wearing sweatsuits and sitting down during games, I maintain, I'm like, they have sedated him. Like, I think college basketball killed Skip Prosser. It is amazingly difficult to get a bunch of people between, like, you know, 5 to 6 people between the ages of, what, 17 and, well, now, like, 28 to do what you want them to do. And, like, you don't really have time to, you know, it's not like college football where, like, you can kind of move people around, like, you know, you can go from play to play to play. Like, I already in the men's, on the men's side, like, Kent State had the most traumatic fuck up end of game thing. Like, I have ever, like, fouling when you don't have a foul to give. Like, it's just, I understand from Kim Mulkey's perspective that she is like, I managed to get this group of maniacs to do what I
right.
want. I'm
right,
awesome.
Right. That's
like, sure,
the
like
role.
They're all pretty cool, but I'm great because
yeah,
I
they're
got
crazy. Yeah, they're all personalities. So let me tell you, guess who
yeah.
can manage personalities? Kim Mulkey. We should say that Kim Mulkey has a long string of bad things that Kim Mulkey has done, right? And I think
yes.
that maybe some of the listeners are not aware of that. So Kim Mulkey, let's see, what was she? She was a COVID skeptic, right? That I don't know. I don't like. I think enough time has passed where I don't put you automatically in the bad
yeah.
category. I might say that you were extremely stupid at the time, but I'm not going to say you're the worst person in the world. But the big thing she did was that Brittany Griner, right, was the player who brought her greatness at Baylor
yeah.
when Kim Mulkey was at Baylor, and when Brittany Griner went to prison in Russia. Kim Mulkey didn't so much as send out a tweet, you know?
Nope.
And when
nope.
she was asked
she
directly
no...
about it, it was like kind of, there was a little bit of a, maybe not a little bit, there was like a sort of anti-LGBTQ vibe to the reason why
oh.
she wasn't doing that.
Oh, absolutely.
And that is, if people are saying that Kim Mulkey is an awful person because of that, I 100% agree. I think that Kim Mulkey is an awful person.
Right.
But I do think
like,
that it is interesting to try and think about her within the context of college sports coaches who are around, who are largely also awful people, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
like this is a group
no,
of awful people.
No, these are all these are all people you would not want to be around. I mean, I think like the fact that she had a player who got her to a 40-0 record, like the most wins ever at Baylor, like Brittany Griner, generational talent. And then Brittany Griner is imprisoned in Russia and Kim Mulkey's like, eh, not my problem. But honestly, yes, I think that there's a great deal of like anti-LGBT sentiment there, but also I think that she is like, this doesn't have anything to do with me anymore, so I don't care, which is a sociopathic way to think about this. But also, she's a college basketball coach. Of course she's a sociopath. Like, again, college coaching in pretty much every sport, you are going to be, if you're like a successful college coach, you are insane. It just happens. Like, you know, Michigan, now former coach Jim Harbaugh, the ways in which people have spent the past 9 years trying to like work around the fact that he's insane instead of just being like, yep, he's insane. Like, this is a milk drinking maniac who slept over at a recruit's house. Like, that's it. he is very good at things, but like, you know, we see this in college sports all the time. Like, Nick Saban, who just retired, like, besides everything he's saying about NIL, like, this is someone who clearly found he hated celebrating winning national titles because he thought it took him away from recruiting. Like, there is a way to be a successful college coach and a way to be a nice person to hang around with, and it's like, you can't really do both. And, like, think about successful men's college basketball coaches. Like, I don't want to hang out with John Calipari. Absolutely not.
No. Like, I mean, if I was a five-star recruit, I would, you know, for the 2 weeks that he was recruited. Absolutely for that, you know.
This is an absolute side note, but if I could ever do a make-a-wish for myself, I want to be recruited like a super high-level five-star recruit to like a big program in some sport. Like, I just want to know. I want to know how, because that red carpet must be so good.
I'll give you my Kim Mulkey take. I want to know what you think, which is that there's this question that is always asked on social media around Kim Mulkey, which is, why do players play for her, right? She's she seems to be, I don't think that calling her a homophobe is fair, but she is definitely not.
Right.
She's not tolerant cool in any type of way. And that she is, if I was, if I had a gay daughter, I would have real reservations about sending her to go play for Kim Mulkey. I'll just put it that way. And I think that's like pretty damning. Right. And I also think that Kim Mulkey is, sociopathic in the ways that other people are. But I think that's the reason why the players are playing for her is because she is so competitive. You know, and she wins, and that's what they want to do. Like, it's very simple. It's like, do you want to win? Like, do you want to play on ESPN? Do you want to have a coach that when you watch her game tape, like Kim Mulkey's like 5'4", and when she was a player, she was the tiniest player on the court. You can see her highlights on YouTube. Like, she is a dog. You know, she's like
she was running. Like, I saw some video of her where I think she was doing that fucking Shaka Smart, like, full court press thing. She's going after inbounds passes all the time. I'm like, it's like watching, like, Muggsy Bogues or something. And you're like, calm down.
I know. And she has this, like, intense face, you know. And she has it now. And now, you know, for the people who don't know, she wears outrageous outfits.
So she's wearing, back then, like, some absurd outfit while staring at you like you have killed her entire family. Like, I would be. But I think, like, as to your point about the intensity, like, again, she wins. And you never get the sense, like, I think players also, we have to remember that, like, for people who are being recruited to play for her or play for anyone else, like, these are people who have been coached since, what, they were 5? And, like, we can't assume that, you know, a lot of these kids are coming out of, and especially now for women, which I think is good, like, you are coming out of the very similar AAU style coaching environments that men are. We're like, your coaches probably aren't very nice when you're like an elite recruit coming out of some like big time program or I'm playing those like AAU travel games that where I'm like, how do you go to actual school? And then I try not to think about that too much. Like, I think that for people who are used to being coached, and you meet Kim Mulkey, and you like, and she tells you like, you and I are gonna win a title together. Yeah, like, yeah. And you also never get the sense like, she is like, I don't think that she would hesitate to play, and she clearly hasn't hesitated to play gay players because that would be impossible to do in women's basketball.
Right.
And like, you get the sense that her driving focus is on winning. And if you want to win a title and you want to become Angel Reese, you want to become like a very prominent player, you want to go to her. I mean, she got, who's that outstanding? There's like a, she was at Louisville. She transferred to LSU.
Oh yeah. Haley Van Lith. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of, there seems to be a lot of agitation there though. Cause Haley Van Lith like was giving this interview recently and she was, they were like, how's your year at LSU gone? And she was like, oh, and she's like, I, you know, the staff has been great and my teammates have been great. And I was like, I know what you're saying. Because Kim Mulkey is not for everyone, you know? Like, if you're not helping her win, you're out.
Yeah, no. And it's like, and that's the thing is like, with men's, I think we're used to that. We're used to people in like men's college coaches being like, you could be the best recruit in the world, but if you're not doing well, like, you know, we're gonna, like, you won't play. And we are used to that. And then you get that from a women's coach. Like, we get a women's coach who is just as insane and sociopathic as a men's coach. And I think that the approach, especially because Kim Mulkey is not, like, she's, you know, and you saw this, I mean, to their credit, Gino and Pat, I know that they probably didn't hate each other, but they performed fucking hating each other.
Right.
And like trying to fuck each other up, which is good. That's how it's supposed to be. Sports are supposed to be like full of like insane beef. Like I want, you know, to watch a YouTube video about like women's basketball beef. I want to do that all the time. It's great. And I mean, you see that between LSU and South Carolina. And I'm like, yes, more fist fights. No fans on the court because that's like, whew, let's not do that.
Yeah, that was crazy.
What are you doing here?
It really was the meme
of the ref being like, I'm out. I am not. You don't pay me enough for this. But like, I think that she is, again, I think she is not a good person. I am going to guess that she's probably not like a highly ethical person. Like, I would not be like, I hope my kids grow up to be more like Kim Mulkey, but like, they should, like, that's not her job. She is paid by LSU to win, and she's done it. That's it. Like,
that's the long and short of it. Yeah.
That's the job. Like, she doesn't need to be. I think that this goes to my annoyance sometimes overall. And I think we've talked about this a little bit, like, that women's sports, that there needs to be some sort of like moral valence to how you watch women's sports. That watching women's sports needs to be like a thing you do because you're a good person.
Right. It's like progressive to watch, and therefore the politics almost have to match it. Right. That's why people used to do this with Serena all the time, where they would heap on all this stuff on Serena. And I was like, I think Serena Williams is the greatest women's athlete of all time. I'm a big tennis fan. And I think that she changed everything. I think she was world changing in terms of the way that people think about sports and tennis. I agree with all of that. Serena Williams is a deeply strange person, you know, the idea as anybody would be. Right. She spent her entire life hitting tennis balls. And idea that she's now like this, like social justice person, like no, that's like, not Serena Williams.
And like, that is something, if I learned anything from Andre Agassi's very good memoir,
so good.
Playing elite tennis sucks and everybody hates it. All these people are not having a good time. And for Serena,
playing terrible tennis also sucks, you know? Like, tennis just sucks. I love it, but it's masochism, you know?
So. No, it's awful. It is genuinely like those like super long, like, I always love watching the Australian Open because it always takes place at the exact like coldest time in the United States. And they're always like, people are fainting and stuff like that. And watching these poor assholes go to like five sets during in like 120 degrees. I've been in, not in Melbourne, but in Sydney when it's that hot, and you're like, I'm not going outside, let alone am I playing elite tennis. And like, it's terrible. And like asking someone to do that while also being like a moral actor or being some sort of icon of social progress, like beyond just being Serena Williams or just being Simone Biles or just being whatever you're doing, you also are supposed to perform being a good moral person who has thoughts and takes on things. Like, I think that is, I don't know, I don't like that. I don't like the fact that watching roughly half the population play a sport needs to have all this like moral valence or something. Like, some women's basketball players fucking suck. Some are really good.
Oh yeah, let me tell you.
That's how this works. Like, that's something, I think that's been something about Caitlin Clark that's been really interesting, is because, you know, you can layer some shit onto it now, but like, she was the first women's basketball player I think I'd seen in a while, since probably like Asia Wilson or something like that at South Carolina. Because I think like the Dawn Staley-ification is like when you first start seeing like, oh, like here's a women's basketball coach who is not pretending to not be an asshole. And I like that. Like, Dawn Staley is like, I'm going to wear full Gucci sweatsuits and scream at people. And I'm like, you do that. But Caitlin Clark was someone where, like, she's coming out of Iowa. She stayed at home in Iowa. And, like, if you can go back, because it's, like, 5 years ago, like, her high school tape is just, like, you know, she was, like, she had so many haters. Like, I can't imagine having that many haters when I'm 16 and doing a sport. But like, there are all these videos of like, you know, people would travel to her games to like boo her, and then she'd drop.
Oh yeah, I've seen that. Like, and that. Then she'd just, and you're just like pull off from the half court.
Yeah, and you're just like, what? But like, I think Caitlin Clark is a player for whom, even if you are a cat, like you watch highlights or like casually interested in basketball and women's basketball, like she's a fucking baller. Like, that game last year, the Final Four game against South Carolina. Oh my God. Like, she was doing shit that's ridiculous for anyone to do. Like,
all right, so
that was some, like, it just, it's, I appreciate that she is a player who seems like we don't have to get into a, like, what she means conversation.
Well,
we don't
I think
have
people
to.
Do, though. Like, we don't have to, but it's a very interesting thing because I want to, that was the next topic I have is Caitlin Clark, right? Caitlin Clark, for the listener, I'm just going to be very quick about this because you should know who she is, right? She's the best women's basketball player, perhaps of all time, at least at the college level. She is a white player from Iowa, and she has no discernible politics. I know this because my friend and I, who are petty people, spent, I would say, half a day looking at social media likes and follows of every single person in Caitlin Clark's family, and we found nothing. We found absolutely nothing.
Wow. Wow.
She has her shit locked down, like that locked down.
She didn't accidentally like somebody who may have also said something blindingly anti-Semitic.
Definitely not. But I was like looking at her brother, everything. But her politics are almost impossible to discern, right? But there is a conversation that happens, right? And the question that has been asked by people like Cheryl Swoops or other, I think that a lot of people on social media is, you know, is it fair that she is getting all this attention, right? And it really blew up last year in the national championship game when Angel Reese, who is a black player at LSU, sort of followed Caitlin Clark around after the game and did this like John Cena,
You can't see me thing.
Right, that Caitlin Clark had allegedly done to a Louisville player earlier in the tournament, and there's a huge talk about it. Why is Angel Reese being criticized for this when Caitlin Clark was lionized for this? And there is this thing that I will say, which is that I don't know if you've been on NBA YouTube or if you watch a lot of NBA clips and go on YouTube. I would say that 60% of YouTube is videos that are Larry Bird was a problem, you know, 15 NBA greats talk about Larry Bird's trash talking. And the stories are always the same. It's like Larry Bird came out and we put a white player on him. And he said to me, why do you have the white boy guard me? That's disrespectful, right? Like, it's the same story every single time, which is a great story, by the way. It's very funny. But it is this fantasy of the white hooper sort of inner being in the what is a black space and sort of acting with a lot of swagger, right? Like, that's what we want. That's what people want out of Caitlin Clark. And there is obviously a racialized element to all of that. However, the thing with Caitlin Clark is that none of that really matters because she's so good. You know what I mean? It's like, like, you can say, you can't, I watch every clip of the Jeff Teague podcast, and they were talking about it, and they were like, you know, Dawn Staley is not getting enough attention for having an undefeated team again. And then one of the Jeff Teague's friends who's on the podcast goes, I mean, I get it, but, you know, this is just, we're talking about something different. And he goes, I'm sorry, it's just bad timing for Dawn Staley because we're dealing with like a different level of player. And so I don't know. I found all that to be very interesting because it shows that there is a level of talent and sort of flair that you can play the game with where the very obvious racial conversations that are there actually like sort of dissolve and don't matter to anyone anymore. Right. You can say, yeah, I guess it exists, but who cares?
Exactly. Like, I think, and I think that that's a really good thing. And it's to her credit, because Caitlin Clark might be the most, like, I don't know how she did this, but also I think, whether Iowa's located in the Midwest is a topic of much disagreement, but like, she's got the very Midwestern, like, she's
wait,
not going to say
weird. Topic of disagreement? How is it not part of the Midwest?
Don't even get into it. I've had we can do an entire podcast on which states are Midwestern and which states are not Midwestern, because there people get very upset about this. But anyway, like, she has the very Midwestern, like, I'm going to be polite and handle my business and not say anything that you're going to be able to get really mad at. And then on the court, I'm going to be mean as fuck. And so, like, after the whole April Reese thing, she was like, or Angel Reese thing, she was like, oh yeah, like, I totally understood that. This is the game. Like, you know, we played hard. Like, she, Angel's a great competitor. Like, she said all shit you say. That's what you do. Also, let's keep in mind that Caitlin Clark did not like come out of the clear blue sky. Like, she's been a high level basketball player her entire life. Like, she had to play on a boys team because the like there was no other option. And so she just was like fucking up middle school dudes for several years. Like, she knows what she's doing. And I think that I really appreciate the fact that Caitlin Clark has, one, like, driven up attention, which is great. But also, you see that even in the games that Iowa has lost this year, they've lost because the other team had to play out of their goddamn mind. Like, you saw that with their game at Nebraska, and you saw that with their game at Ohio State. Like, both of those games were games where it was like Caitlin Clark versus the entire other team. Like, every single player had to play the best game of their lives at home in front of a friendly crowd in order to beat her. And I think, like, that's something I really love. Like, I really love the fact that she is so good that she just, like, she stresses me out. She's so good. Like, with the run they went on last year, like, there were moments where I'm like, a normal person shouldn't be able. I mean, it was like, you know, the only comparison I could think of is like, you know, young Steph Curry, where you'd think you had them because they're like, no way they're going to shoot from here. And then obviously she's going to shoot from the logo and she's going to make it and it's going to be awesome. But like, she's stressful as a player. And that's really good. Like, it's really good that we can have, that women's basketball can have players who are like stressful for the opposition, and people who are just like, I don't know. I think that in a weird way, I think we might be even underestimating her. I think that, you know, you saw that a little bit from like Cheryl Swoops and a couple of other people where it's like, oh, you know, is she really that good? Or are we just paying too much attention to her or something? I'm like, no, she is really that good. And there are lots of really good players in women's basketball right now. And she is the best of all of those really good players at the moment. And like, there's been, I don't know, I think that there, I really appreciate that she is like, she's not going to take part in the conversation about her. She is just going to like show up and beat ass. And I like that.
Yeah, there the Kevin Durant had this interview I saw where he was talking about Caitlin Clark, and it was funny because it showed the difference between like Kevin Durant and LeBron. And he was basically saying that when Caitlin Clark was a senior in high school, KD went to this AU tournament and he was watching some of the girls play, which is what, you know, like a lot of these great NBA players, they watch a lot of women's hoops. And yeah. I think it's because they just love hoops, you know,
yeah.
Especially KD. And he was like, who is this girl who is doing everything for her team? This is crazy. And then someone told him that's a top player in the country. And then he was like, oh, and then he like sort of locked in and he was like, yeah, this is different.
Yeah.
I just thought that was funny compared to what LeBron would say would be like, I saw her when she was 15 and I knew, you know, he's like, I can see the greatness within her.
Yeah, absolutely.
There is something about her that is like, that feels like it is different and everyone can recognize it. And it is interesting because honestly, like, I think that people who listen to this podcast would know there usually would be nothing more annoying to me than a player that was getting way too much credit because they were white and polite to everybody. Like, I would normally dislike that person. But I don't think I would dislike them as a player, but I would hate the discourse around them, you know?
Yeah.
And man, I don't know. It's kind of amazing. She's just transcended all of that. I will watch every single game that she plays in this tournament. And that is not, I don't know if I'm going to watch every, well, I'll probably watch every Carolina game, but like, I'm not going to watch any, like the other games unless I have money on it, you know? So like, it is this weird moment where there's just this huge, do you think that the attention around women's basketball will stay anywhere close to the same once she leaves after this year? Like, do you think this is about her? Or do you think that it's,
I mean, I think it started in some way with her. Started is a complicated question because I think like women's basketball attention has been growing and growing. And some of that has just been like through media decision making, through ESPN being like, yes, we will show every game of the women's tournament on television, which is an insane thing to have to say, like an absolutely insane thing to have to say. But like them saying like, yes, we will show all of this on the television you can watch, not on like ESPN3, some weird shit that you have to, or ESPN Plus, I believe now it is, that you have to have, like, you know, your fucking Hulu login to get into. Like, there has been a lot of investment in media decision making. And I think that you see players, especially, I mean, and I'm interested to hear your thoughts. Like, there's been a kind of a, I don't like the fact that people have been looking at the growth of women's basketball and some of the comparative less growth in men's basketball and been like, this is because men's players are doing NIL and they don't stay long enough and they want too much money. And I'm like, no, like, one, there's always been money in basketball. Like, let's don't lie to me. Like, come on. Like, what? No. Like, I don't like the fact that it's like, oh, women are better. Like, in some way it implies that, like, women's basketball players are just better people because they stay all 4 years or do some other shit. And I'm like, no, it's just different. The economic model, like if women's players had the chance to jump after the freshman year to the rookie contracts that you get in the NBA, they would. Right now, the WNBA is in this weird space where there actually aren't enough teams and there aren't enough slots. So you could get drafted in top 15 and not wind up on a team. It's really weird.
Yeah.
And yeah, so like, the opportunities that are available to do that, it's just different. But I do think like the attention is coming with money. Like if lots of people are paying attention to a sporting event, like it doesn't really matter to me until the money shows up. And when the money has shown up, which it has, like those viewership numbers are starting to show up for teams that aren't Iowa. Like, yes, Caitlin Clark is a guaranteed sellout anywhere she plays. Great. But when it's teams that aren't her, when you're starting to see viewership, like the numbers of people going to, so I live in Salt Lake City and Utah women's basketball, very good. They have like some really outstanding players and you're seeing like attendance at those games going up. USC, no one goes to USC sporting events. And I understand why now, because it's beautiful all the time. Why would you want to go inside? But like that, those numbers are starting to go up. Like, I think that the full court press of, so to speak, of like moving women's basketball into a thing that you would put on at a bar or just be knowledgeable about, that is good. There are a lot of players across the league that people might know the names of for any number of reasons. And I think like that's really good. And I think like I am very hopeful that this will continue. Like, I think that there's going to be a lot of really shitty stuff after this season where people are like, oh, you know, with no Caitlin Clark, what's the point to watching? Like, come on. Like, that, I think that that seems to, one, that puts way too much on Caitlin Clark. Like, way too much. Like, people saying, like, oh, she won't make as much money in the WNBA as she does now. I'm like, do you think that Nike's going to be like, you know what, never mind. Like, come on. But I think, like, the way, like, she has helped to cement a foundation that is very good for women's basketball. Especially, like, it was interesting because you're talking about, like, watching UNC, which obviously you will watch. I have the great joy in this tournament that Michigan is fucking awful and didn't make it, so I have no stress whatsoever. Oh, I can't wait. I could just be like, let's just watch, let's just see what happens. An 8 versus 9, whatever. I don't care. Like, it's great. There's actually a great deal of freedom in having your team not be in, because you're like, who cares? Like, I hope Purdue loses it early again. That would be great.
For that'd me be personally. Funny, at least. Yeah, yeah. Ugh. Although, but, like, my Asian American or Asian Canadian brother Zach Edey would suffer. I think, like, all right. So my thinking is that I think it's going to go down a little bit, as it would, but I think it will not be fatal, just because I think that, as we pointed out at the beginning, college sports is about rivalries between coaches. Yeah. And the Kim Mulkey, Don Staley is truly a battle between good and evil. I mean, Don Staley is like basically the role model that I hope my daughter like looks up to when she gets old
enough
to
care about
such things.
Super fashionable, doesn't take shit. I love it.
Yeah, and but also seems to really, I have this thing, and I don't know if it, like, maybe it's slightly problematic, but if you played women's sports at a time when nobody gave a shit about it and every comment was some dickhead going like, oh, you know, why would anyone watch this? But you competed and you excelled. I just have this immense amount of respect for it. It's almost like poets or something like that, where you're just like, yeah, you fucking killed this. And maybe nobody cared, but like you did it. And I'd have this deep respect because you clearly did it because of love of what you're doing.
Right.
And Dawn Staley has all of that. She was a great player. I mean, she's one of the great players of all time. And now she's one of the great coaches of all time. She does not compromise on anything, you know? And it's just like, it's an amazing thing to watch. And then you have on the other side, like, you know, on the other side, you have Kim Mulkey, who also does all the same things, but for evil, you know, at least in my mind. And it's like, it's such a good rivalry. So I think that will survive.
Absolutely.
Men's college basketball doesn't have that. Right, because right now the problem with men's college basketball is not the, well, first of all, the quality play is awful, but secondly, I think the problem is that we don't have these coaches anymore who are great, right? Like Calipari, Kentucky has been not the number one team in the country for I don't know how long.
Yeah,
Krzyzewski is gone, right?
Yeah,
Roy Williams is gone.
You defeated.
Yeah. We ended it. I will say I love Carolina Duke, but it's not the same when we beat John Shire. I don't give a shit that we beat John Shire, you know? And so college basketball doesn't have these coaches that are super famous. Like UConn's coach, Danny Hurley. It's like, yeah, I guess he's kind of famous because of his brother, but like, I don't really think that much about him in the same way that we thought about Jim Calhoun, right, at UConn.
No, so, like, I had to remember that last year, like, the title game in men's basketball was UConn versus San Diego State. And for a second, I was like, is that real? Did that happen?
Wait, is that real? Like, I had no idea. They played San Diego State. Yeah, see, I do. Yeah. You just told me, and I can't even remember that was real.
No, of course you... No, it happened. Like, that was a real thing that took place. Like, it's, I don't know, like...
But everyone remembers LSU versus Iowa, right? Like everyone remembers that. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a thing like I'm well aware of. Even like I genuinely was like, did this some Mandela effect thing? Did I make this up? No, it actually just happened.
San Diego State. Yeah, I don't remember. Yeah, that like, at all. That's all right, last topic here.
Yeah.
We touched on it a little bit. Do you think there's any truth to this NIL transfer portal stuff? For the listeners who don't know, NIL is the way in which college players get paid now. It means name, image, likeness, I believe. And it's just like, basically you can just pool money together and pay players. And the transfer portal being that, you know, this is why Carolina has a 25-year-old named Cormac Ryan who looks like Lesser Kennedy, right? Like in his 40s. Now I love him, but he's like 25. And I think he basically has two master's degrees from Notre Dame. And then he came to Carolina. I'm just like, you're too old. You know, what do you think about that? Like, I go back and forth where like, look, I will say, I think the players should be paid, period. You know, I support all the unionization attempts by the players. And I think that they should be able to transfer where they want because, you know, I don't know. It's a free fucking country. However, I have some reservations about it. So I wanted to hear what you had thought about it all. It, like in the context, not just of basketball, but also of football, which I know that you're a massive fan of.
Yeah. Well, I think that in general, I have seen the ways in which how players are treated and the expectations of players and then how coaches are treated and their expectations. Like Brian Kelly going from Notre Dame to LSU, acquiring an accent and being like, I am now an SEC football coach after, you know, screaming at children for what, 11 years at Notre Dame. I can't remember exactly how long it was. It felt longer. The fact, you know, that coaches can move basically at any time. You can have brought in your entire recruiting class in football and then be like, actually, like you get to that recruiting dead period and you're like, actually, I would like to go coach for the Chargers. I think that it is to me fair for players to have that same ability to move. Like how many times there was a UNC football player who he was trying to get eligibility to play and finally did after like much machination so that he could be, he wanted to transfer to UNC.
Yeah, Des Walker.
Yeah. And he wanted to transfer for like family reasons. And the NCAA was like, I don't know about all this. And like, come on, the fuck on. Right. Like, I think it's interesting because how NIL, and this, I mean, granted, in general, when we talk about money and people, we either focus on the people who have like billions of dollars or like $10. There's not really like, we don't understand the middle class of America. So of course we don't understand the middle class of sports. Like there are the people who think that everyone is making just so much money from NIL. That's not true. They're not. Like the average player is probably not making very much at all. Like some of the NIL collectives at specific schools will be like, they will go after specific players. Like they'll be like, we want to keep this person, this person, this person, this person, and keep them from going to the NFL or going into the NBA draft or something like that. But like, it does not mean that everybody's just making a ton of money. A lot of the people who are making a lot of money are women's players. Generally women's players who do really well on Instagram. But like,
oh yeah, yeah. Those twins. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And like, yeah. I, in general, though, I think I like capitalism. I think it's good when people can be rewarded for how they, you know, buy the market for their behavior. You saw like, and a lot of these players also, they are far more savvy than I think they are being given credit for being. Like Blake Corum, running back from Michigan, now in the NFL draft, like he invested in real estate. So now he owns like a bunch of property in Virginia. And I'm like, sure, whatever. That's fine.
Like, it's like Greg Anthony did that at UNLV. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's fine. I mean, it's funny because you go back before, and I'm sure you can think of like all of the UNC players who never really quite made it in the NBA, but were like fucking legends in college. And think about how much money they would have received. Like, I think about like Michigan players who kind of like, you know, you didn't really hear about them much in the NFL, but like Denard Robinson, for example, would have made $1 billion in NIL at Michigan if that had been available to him in 2011.
Right.
And like, I think that people, you know, it's always going to be weird and there are always going to be issues from it. Like, but I think it is far sketchier for colleges and universities to be working with gambling outfits than I think it is for college athletes to be paid for their name, image, and likeness, which is already being used. It was being used this whole time. Like, they are being, like, if you're a Notre Dame quarterback, you are among the most famous people in the state of Indiana. Like, people are using your name, image, and likeness, just you had nothing to do with it. And so, like, I understand people having concerns, but I think, like, the concerns for college sports, that's, like, 10th on my list.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with all of that, except for the love of capitalism. This is a leftist podcast, Jane.
Sorry.
However, I will no. You just had to say I love workers. You know, and these players are workers.
I
and
call you labor.
This audience will. It's the same idea, but like the problem here is basically that in football, I don't think it's a problem because I think that the players are much more fungible. So, for example, my daughter played flag football this year. And her coach was a Cal football player. They have this amazing program here in town where the coaches are Cal football players. And I actually think they're getting paid through some sort of NIL type of thing, you know, because before they couldn't get paid, right? And now they get paid to coach these kids. And her coach was this guy, Rush. He was he's like 24 or something like that. He played 4 years at North Dakota State. And now he's playing at Cal. He's going to be their right tackle, right? And I'm sure he's getting paid, right, to go play at Cal. He used the transfer portal. And now, will anyone care that Rushy is the right tackle at Cal? No, you know. With basketball, it's a little bit different because you have more of a connection with the players. And I would say that I don't think it's NIL, but the transfer portal is a little, right, it's a little weird when it's like, okay, so our second best player this year, I think, is this guy, in my opinion, this guy, Ingram, and he went to Stanford, right? And he now plays for Carolina. And he, maybe he's our third best player, but he's very good. He's, you know, but he played full time at Stanford, and then he came over, right? And so it's different in that it used to be that you would have these players go up, and this, I'm talking about the old days, right? Like 1980s, 1990s, you would have players progress and then an exciting freshman would come and you'd be like, oh, I wonder if the freshman can crack the starting five and give us some energy, right? There's a continuity to that type of narrative that is very satisfying, but it is also quite paternalistic and obviously relies upon exploitation, right? And so the question is, like, is it better to have the non-exploitative model? Absolutely. Is the non-exploitative model just as satisfying on a narrative level? You got to do a lot of personal work to like free yourself of the mindset, you know, the exploitative mindset, and then it can be, but that's pretty hard, you know? And so I think
it is challenging. I mean, that's been something like I've really taken to the, I mean, I think I would feel differently about this, and I'm aware that I'm a fan of a program in sports that has a fuck ton of money and can go get people if they want to. And so over the past couple of years, Michigan football has been able to be like, hey, you're like the best offensive lineman at a shitty program. Like they got, this dude Olu, from UVA football, not very good. Him. Awesome. And so like brought him in at center. He played 1 year, I think at Michigan, won the award for best center in the country, went to the NFL and we're like, go with God, young man. Like, I think about it in terms of like, you can have, you know, 1 to 2 years here and you can then go on to do the thing that we know you really want to do. And I think about this the same way with like Hunter Dickinson, who played at Michigan, transferred to Kansas. I love the fact that he was just like, I'm just going to do a heel turn literally anywhere I go. So like he goes to Kansas and starts talking about how this is the real Midwest. Michigan's not in the Midwest. And I'm like, why? You're like, sure? Like what? It's also a hilarious heel turn because I'm like, that's it? Because you can
yeah. Like, I'm gonna contribute to the what is the Midwest discourse that I didn't even know existed. Apparently,
yeah, it's a whole thing. But like, I think it to me it especially because I think that I am a little younger than you are. And so my understanding of like how this works, like I think about the players and this has been changing over time. Like, I definitely am like, I want, okay, maybe this sounds maternalistic, but I do wind up saying things like, I just want what's best for you. Like, if you need to transfer so that you can get playing time, like one kid, Zach Charbonnet, he transferred from Michigan, I believe, to UCLA. And like, he got way more playing time and was like their top running back and was really good. And I'm like, great, fine. Especially if it's not going to come up, like you're not going to play each other. Like, it's fine. And so I think for me, like, I definitely am like, especially because I understand how hard this must be, like how difficult it would be to spend 4 years at a program, have some eligibility left because of like weirdo COVID stuff and be like, I know that I would be like, I would not be able to play more here. So I'm going to go somewhere else where they need me. Like, if you are, who was that? There was some kid who, he was like Notre Dame quarterback. They lost, like he had some game. Is that the game they lost to Marshall? And that, like, he had like two pick sixes and you could see.
Buckner.
Yeah. Yeah. Like he's, you could kind of see everybody being like, ugh,
I know, bro. He's Korean.
Like Caleb Williams has happened too. Like,
right.
Like, it's good that you don't just suffer. Like, I think about all of the people. I went to high school with this girl whose boyfriend was like the best football player in Cincinnati. Like, he played, he went to St. Xavier High School. He was like the number one player in the state. He was so good. And then he went to Ohio State and was like never heard from again. Like, I'm sure he's doing fine and probably runs like a very lucrative real estate practice now or something. But like, it would have been cool if in 2006, 2007, he could have been like, you know what? This isn't working out. I'm going to transfer to Wake Forest. And I will crack the depth chart and be way more visible and be able to do this in a different way. Because like, Ohio State, like those big programs, I mean, you know, whether it's UNC, Kansas, something like that. Like, it's really hard sometimes if you were like the best player in your high school or in high school, and then you go to this college and like nothing happens for you. And like, I'm aware that like old people would be like, oh, you just got to work your way through it and do some weird shit about Michael Jordan getting cut from his JV team or something. And I'm like, no, if I were at a job and I hated it, I would not just stay because of like the moral valence of me staying. I would leave.
Yeah, there's also like some of the coaches are just assholes, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't vibe with them. We had a guy, Walker Kessler, who's like a good NBA player now, but freshman year, every time he did something, Roy Williams would just yank him out of the game, you know? And my thought was always like, that guy is by far the best NBA prospect that we have on the team, but he can't get on the court because he keeps, you know, he'll just shoot a three or something and then Roy will put him on the bench.
Yeah.
And so then he went to Auburn and he, you know, first round pick and everything like that. And he ended up being, now he's like a very good NBA player. He's always hurt, but like, you know, like he's like a borderline he has like borderline all-star talent, but okay.
That's great.
We have hit an hour. I think that's basically how. Yeah,
that sounds great.
Thank you for coming on the show. This was
That reminds me. I actually do have one question for you.
Okay.
Should I become a Kings fan? Should I jump on now?
Well, yes, I think so. But we're not very good is the problem. And it's actually kind of frustrating this year to watch. The problem with the Kings is that they lose every single game they should win. And it's baffling why. And it's actually a meme within the Kings Twitter community, which is very small. But it's basically if you see an injury, so like, you know, like this happened a couple of nights ago where you have an injury report where a tanking team shows that every single player that they have is hurt or out for personal reasons. And then Kings Twitter will quote tweet that and say, we're going to lose by 20, you know, because like the worse the competition is, the worse we play. It's very frustrating, but, you know, I don't know. It's an exciting team and the fan base is great. And I will say the nice thing about being a fan of a team that has a very small but passionate and cool and doesn't expect that much online fan base is that like you can kind of, it's like quite pleasant to talk about the team online, which is not true of anything, right? Especially college sports where it's like the most toxic mess of all time.
Oh, yeah. No, you know, I live in Salt Lake, and so I've been to a Jazz game, but I can't get over the fact that the Jazz head coach isn't younger than I am, but he's like a month away. I'm like, I can't.
Oh yeah, yeah. He's 35 or something. 36
or something. It is wild. Like when he has conversations with his players, it looks like a player coach thing. I went to a Jazz game with my mother-in-law, who's from New Zealand. This is like her first NBA game. She's great. But I was like, oh, that's the coach. And she's like, are you sure? And I was like, I'm sure, but I understand why this is confusing for you. But yeah, Jay, thank you so much for having
Don't
me.
Don't be a Jazz fan. Be a Kings fan instead. All right. Well, thank you for listening to the show. We do this every week. Tyler will be back next week. He's been on a vacation, and he will be back. If you'd like to contribute, it's $5 a month at goodbyesubsec.com. And if you'd like to email us, it's timetosaygoodbyepod@gmail.com. Jane, thank you so much. I will talk to you soon.
Sounds great.
Okay. Sogno all'orizzonte.